Good afternoon. Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Michael Beatty. I am the attorney of record for Bradley Klingshein. We're here on an appeal from the La Plata County District Court. I brought this appeal on behalf of Mr. Klingshein, who, by way of background, received certificates of tax sale purchase from his sister. And they were for two adjoining lots located in La Plata County, Colorado. And after 3 years, Mr. Klingshein applied to the La Plata County Treasurer for two treasurer's deeds. And after the expiration of the redemption period, received title to both properties. The plaintiff, upon becoming aware of the issuance of the deeds, brought suit, and the La Plata County District Court voided the two deeds. We're here today, Your Honor, because Mr. Klingshein believes that the La Plata County District Court ignored the appropriate legal standards and did not apply them to the facts, or excuse me, did not apply the appropriate legal standard to the facts. Now, specifically talking about the standards in Schmidt versus Lango, that's 874 P. Second 447, cited at page 450 and 451, and citing with favor Bald Eagle Mining and Refining Company versus Brunson at 437 P. Second 59, decided in 1968. Those two indicated that when a sale notice, a tax sale notice, is returned, the county treasurer must then re-examine the county records to check the address for the accuracy and look for an alternative address. I presume, and I think the case law supports, the assumption is, and I believe constitutional requirements are, that the owner of the property must have all available opportunity to receive notice of the pending tax sale. But I reiterate that the first step that must take place before the county treasurer has the duty of re-examining his records, is his records of addresses, is the return of the tax sale notice, which automatically indicates that the owner of the property did not get notice of the sale. There are also cases that indicate that
Excuse me, counsel, didn't the return of the tax sale notice in this case clearly indicate that the owner of the property did not receive the notice that was sent?
It was not a tax sale notice that we returned, Your Honor. It was a green card, return receipt requested, and that person who signed the card was appointed by Mr. Cardell as his surrogate to accept his mail there.
Did the treasurer know that at that point, though?
I'm sure he did not. This was the first time it was brought back. What he did know when the card came back is that the card went to the correct address. And Ms. Cleo Cardell signed the card.
He did know that the notice went to the correct address?
Yes, Your Honor.
How did he know that when it was returned?
The address matched the address that he had in his records.
That's the address that he sent the original notice to, as opposed to the address of the person who signed the certificate.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor. And Mr. Cardell had set that up. He, in fact, had no access personally to that lockbox at 705 North Vine Street in Farmington, New Mexico. It was always his mother who got the mail. And he arranged for that. And he said so in the record repeatedly.
But the treasurer was not aware of any of this information at the time.
No, that's correct, Your Honor. The only thing he was aware of was that Mr. Cardell had given him an address at 705 North Vine Street, Farmington, New Mexico, and that the card had come back signed by Cleo Cardell. And that to him intimated that the notice was not undeliverable. And that has been standard in the case law that we are working with, Your Honor. The case law said once it comes back as the notice itself, once the tax sale notice itself comes back as undeliverable, that triggers the due diligence standard. And the two cases I cited earlier indicate as much, indicate that specifically.
So is your argument then that only when it comes back as undeliverable does that require the treasurer to do anything further if it comes back indicating the person who signed for it is not the person to whom it was addressed? That does not?
That does not, Your Honor.
And why should there be that distinction?
Because there is no indication that the person that was appointed to get the mail didn't get it. In other words, in this particular situation, the card came back as having been delivered to the correct address.
Well, actually, but it was signed off. In terms of delivered, it was mailed to, it had the correct address on the front, but on the back it had the address of 703 North Vine as being the person who picked it up.
That was his mother, and that was her address.
Right, but the treasurer didn't know that at that point.
That would be accurate, Your Honor.
Counsel, in looking at the cases, it seems that where the court has found that the treasurer did enough once something comes back, and I understand your argument about what has to come back, but in those cases, finding that the treasurer did enough, the court notes that there was nothing in the records that indicated another address, okay? So it seems to me the crux of the matter here is that we have a slightly different factual circumstance. We do have records that if you go back a number of years, there are other addresses in the records. So the question is, to me, does the treasurer have an obligation to do something with those prior addresses? Is there any case law on that? Because I didn't see anything dealing with prior addresses. I mean, to me, this would be a common circumstance. We all move, okay? But after 10 years, we don't exactly expect to be getting mail at our old address.
Your Honor, if it please the court, I did look at every case that was cited by opposing counsel and every other case I could find. And I did not find this circumstance to have previously arisen. What I did find in every other circumstance was that the tax sale notice, the actual notice of the sale, was sent back, or it became known to the treasurer, as in one case, the sale notices for years had been sent to vacant lots. The parties, I think the cases for the property was located in Gateway, Colorado, and the property owners had moved to Glenwood Springs. And the court found that there was clearly no notice. I did find in one of the cases that was cited by opposing counsel that, and I'll give you the cite, that the court actually had found that when the parties had left the country, that was Columbus Investments versus Lewis at 48 Pacific 3rd, 1322, Supreme Court holding in 2002, that the fact that the treasurer had both published and sent the mail to the last known address was sufficient. And they didn't find, and that was in dicta, it was in footnote 3 of that case. That was not the purpose of the case, but that was in dicta, and that was, I felt like, a meaningful holding. In Langdell, Schmidt versus Langdell, it says, and I'm reading from page 451, it says the notice requires, the statute requires the mail to be sent to a record interest holder if that interest is reasonably ascertainable in the county records, and should, and I'm quoting here, should the notice be returned as undeliverable, the treasurer is required to re-examine the county records for any alternate addresses. This means providing notice is sufficient, as a matter, at least under the circumstances, and will comply with the constitutional due process.
Does it make any difference that the person who signed here had the same last name as the plaintiff here? And I guess what I'm getting at is this. Let's take a different hypothetical where it goes to this address, but it gets signed by, say, Jerry Jones, okay? And wouldn't the treasurer think, maybe this person doesn't own this property anymore. Maybe I should do something else. Doesn't, in other words, doesn't the fact that there is, it's not the same name, it's not the same person signing for it, matter?
Your Honor, I think that would be an implication that one might draw from the circumstances if it were a different person. I think a similar implication can be drawn, though, that that person has the authority to sign for the mail. But I think that's also something that is not contemplated by the statute. I believe that the statute indicates that what has to, the duty of the treasurer is to send it to the place for which it has the accurate address and last known address. And the actual notice itself was kept by someone at that address, or at least it was kept by someone nearby, as the records would indicate, because it was actually an adjoining lockbox. And the irony of this, and I would note there was a case that pointed out that people could, if by moving around, they could simply stall the sale of these tax, excuse me, they could stall the closing of these tax sales simply by saying, well, you got the wrong address. A little bit of an informal pin the tail on the donkey, I suppose. But I do believe the statute does not contemplate the fact that another person may have received it. There was no case law on that point, and the statute itself does not indicate the treasurer has a duty to make sure the correct person receives it. If the notice comes back and it's absolutely certain that the owner of the property did not get notice, then the diligence, the extra diligence standard applies. And virtually every case I found supported that position, but does not address the issue of whether the wrong person signed for the card.
Well, in this case, though, isn't it the situation where the trial court ultimately said, because the treasurer did not then at least go back and look at the records to see what the circumstance was, that the treasurer had not conducted due diligence at that point, and perhaps had the treasurer conducted due diligence, we'd be in a different situation now, but it was that not taking that additional step of looking back at the records that created the concern.
I recognize the trial court did say that, Your Honor, and I would suggest to the court that unless there is some other direction from the recorded record of case law and statutory law, the Platte County Treasurer, once he gets the card back showing that it did go to, it went to the address that was issued. And I would suggest that in this situation, the subsequent facts indicate that the mother was elderly. But I guess the issue I'm coming to is that the problem wasn't with the treasurer, it was with the exchange of the parties on the other end. And I think that is the statutory line that the statute prevents us from going into, so that the treasurer isn't absorbing a lot of extra responsibility. And with the police report, I'll hold the rest of my time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is John Kelly. I'm the attorney for the Mr. and Mrs. Cordell, in this case, the appellees, bar number 21913. To begin with, if we go to the trial court's findings on paragraph 8 of the trial court's order, the trial court notes that there was a subdivision in years past that resulted in a reassignment of numbers between 703, 705, and 707, 909. that probably resulted in the underlying issue. Stepping back and looking at the big picture in this case, when a property is taken in a tax sale, it's a state action, it's a takings of property, and basic requirements of due process come into play. Colorado courts have consistently held that when there is a defect in the notice, and I agree that this is a little bit unusual because here the notice has come back and it's shown that this notice was sent to a different address than that to which it was mailed, which is a result of the subdivision of that property, signed by somebody who didn't have a redemption interest. And that's as much notice of a defect as any of the other aspects of the case law, whether it comes back undeliverable.
Counsel, what if Mr. Cordell had been living at that address and had been signed for by his mother? Would you still be claiming that was insufficient?
Your Honor, I would, and I think this goes beyond just, you know, maybe somebody else in the household signing for that. What the problem is, it was sent to a different address.
But it was
delivered to a different address.
Well, I don't know. Let's not talk about that. I really don't think that's an issue here. It seems to me the issue here is Mr. Cordell admitted in his testimony that he deliberately set it up this way. Okay, he deliberately chose intentionally to have his mail delivered this way. It had been delivered that way for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And he said, and I'll just verbatim quote, he expected the treasurer to have mailed it to this address. Mm-hmm. Having done all that, how can he complain about a lack of due process? This is the procedure he chose.
Yeah. And Your Honor, I think it is significant that it was signed for by someone else other than the taxpayer.
But that's what he wanted. He expressly said in his testimony, I want to go to this lockbox that my mother has because it's safer going there than it is to my residence. That's what he said.
And Your Honor, I mean, I think we get into the burden of proof as a trial court, as the trier of fact, made the conclusion that that wasn't sufficient notice. And we'd have to look at a clearly erroneous standard to disturb the trial court's findings under the circumstances.
That doesn't really answer my question. I mean, the facts here really aren't in dispute. It's the inferences, I suppose, or the legal effect of those facts.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no dispute, in other words, that he set this up.
Yeah.
He said, this is how I want my mail to be delivered. He did this deliberately, and he even said he expected the treasurer to abide by it.
Yeah. And Your Honor, I mean, I don't think that's much different than a situation where, let's say, he moved. You know, here the trial court found that there was a subdivision, the addresses got all changed. 703, 705, 707 were reassigned, and it was signed for by somebody that didn't have a redemption interest in the property.
But the issue is this diligent inquiry, okay? And you're saying that the treasurer had to go back, I assume you're saying this, and check the records. But the records are going to show, well, 705 North Vine's been the address for years in both the assessor's and clerk and recorder's office, because that's how Mr. Cordell set it up deliberately. So are you saying then that a treasurer has to go back and look for prior addresses, what appear to be prior old addresses, and start mailing things to prior old addresses?
Well, and I think that's what the case law suggests.
No, it doesn't. There's not a case like this dealing with, there's no case that says a treasurer has to mail something to an old address.
Okay. And I think it's either Perkins or Schmidt talked about going back through and looking at where the deed was sent to where the clerk and recorder, where the clerk and recorder had sent the deed, and suggested that would be, you know, that ended up being the current address. And what's interesting here is if you look at the in that exhibit 4 in the trial, summary exhibit lays that out for both of those properties. As you go through there, you see that a valid address for Mr. Cordell and Mrs. Cordell exists in those records in years past.
Well, yeah, in years past, but like I say, I moved from my current house 20 years ago. I don't expect anybody, I would not reasonably expect anybody to start mailing things to my 20-year-old address. It's not my current address. There's nothing on the face of these records to indicate that your client was actually living where he claimed to be living. I mean, by all indications, somebody looking at that, the treasurer would say he's living at 705 North Vine.
And I understand that concern, and as I think as yourself suggested, is it the last name? And what if it was Mr. Jones that signed the card? Would that trigger a duty? And if this was delivered to a different address than where it was sent, does that trigger some type of a duty on the part of the treasurer? And here we have the treasurer doing absolutely nothing, in spite of the fact that the treasurer knows of this irregularity.
But I guess what I'm getting to is, what in the world was the treasurer supposed to do? The case law says go back and check your records. The treasurer had done that here. They would see that for the last several years, they've been mailing things to 705 North Vine, that is what your client requested that they do. Okay, I verified it. Under our case law, that would be sufficient. What case law is there for the proposition that the treasurer has to start mailing things to old addresses?
Well, and Your Honor, I would turn to the Schmidt and Perkins case, where the treasurer is asked to do a diligent inquiry into the assessor's and the clerk of the court's records. And a lot of times, those records may be quite old. They might be 5, 10, 15, 20, or more years older when you're looking at the clerk of the court's records to determine where a deed was mailed to when the taxpayer came into possession of that property. And one of the consistent threads through the case law here is that once there's an irregularity is shown, and the burden shifts to demonstrate with the treasurer's office conducting any diligent efforts, and the fault of the taxpayer is not something that the trial court is supposed to focus on.
May I follow up on something that is related to the questions that Judge Jones was asking? In Parkinson and then in Seiler, they seem to talk about the fact that had the treasurer gone back to the records, the treasurer would have found these facts, which then would have led him or her to a different notice being sent out. Whereas in this case, had the treasurer gone back, he would have found the same address. Is this a no harm, no foul situation, or is that a significant difference between this case and those prior cases?
Well, and Your Honor, to answer that question, with both respect to both of these properties, the 5207 Hubbard Road, which Mr. Cordell and Mrs. Cordell both testified was a valid address for them, a valid current address. That property, that address was found in the assessor's records for one of the properties, and in both assessor's records and the clerk and recorder's records for one of the other properties.
10 years earlier. 1999 was the last year of that address.
It was a number of years earlier.
That goes back to my question. You have to mail to 10-year-old addresses? I mean, in Seiler, that's what happened, and the court found that was an error. You mailed to an old address, and the court said, nope, you got to use the current address.
Mm-hmm.
How is the treasurer supposed to know? Doesn't the treasurer have the right to rely on the records given by your client? This is the address I want to mail to.
Your Honor, to answer that question, again, this is a takings. And the statute and the case law requires the treasurer to make diligent efforts. And I think the diligent efforts require, as the case law suggests, to go back to the assessor's records, to go back to the clerk and recorder's records, find those addresses, and if those addresses are different, send the notices to those addresses.
They're 10 years old. But, I mean, just so we're clear, that you're saying they had an obligation to mail something to a 10-year-old address?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Isn't that contrary to Schmidt, though?
In the Schmidt case, the clerk and recorder actually did go back and examine both the clerk and recorder's and the assessor's addresses to determine if there was anything else to do, and sent those to a former attorney. I think that the issue in the Schmidt case really was the assessor required, county treasurer required to go beyond that and start searching telephone records. Keep in mind that's a 1993 case, pre-internet. And the court there determined, no, there's not an obligation to go and start searching for directory assistance and telephone directories and so on. But there, the county treasurer did make a diligent effort and did search both the assessor's records, its own records, and the clerk of the court's records.
Let me follow up with a question, please, Mr. Kelly. Following up on both Judge Ashby and Judge Jones's questions, if the return of service, not return of service, but the certified mail return receipt comes back as it did, indicating that the notice of tax sale was received by someone other than the property owner at a different address, mm-hmm. and we take your argument that then the treasurer is required to, through diligent efforts, see if it can find a residential address for the property owner.
Right.
Let's say that the treasurer did that in this case, looked around, said, I can't find anything other than 10-year-old addresses. And this address I sent it to, through diligent efforts on my part, seems to be the correct address for the residents of the Court Hills. Is there a statutory alternative under those circumstances for the treasurer to take in effecting delivery of the notice to the Court Hills?
Well, the statute doesn't specify how far back, if that's what you're asking me, how far back it is.
What I'm asking, I'll ask you this specifically. What's the effect of Section 1B of the statute rather than 1A? 1A talks about personal service or by registered or certified mail after diligent inquiry. Mm-hmm. 1B talks about sending a notice to the property owner after diligent inquiry. Why are there two sections, one providing for service and one providing that the notice be sent?
My understanding is it has to do with the value of the property.
I know if it's over $500, you do this.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that it would be odd to say that the property is not worth $500, so under 1A you have to obtain personal service, and if it's over $500, then you can do it by just sending a notice to the property owner. So I'm just looking for explanation of why is there that distinction.
I think the distinction there, I'm going back to the case law, I didn't see any requirement for anyone having to personally serve with the notices and having the process served. I think that Section B is clarifying what it means by service under Section A. It says by personal service or by registered or certified mail. And under Section B, it talks about certified mail or registered mail. And making a diligent effort to determine what that address is. And so, yes, I would argue that due process requires that the county treasurer go back and look at the public records. And even if those addresses appear to be old, I mean, even if they appear to be 40, 50 years old, if the deed was mailed to address A, then that ought to be an address that they would take a look at. But when a notice comes back like this, it shows that it was signed for by somebody other than the taxpayer at an address that it wasn't sent to. I think diligent efforts requires that the county treasurer at least do something, resend the notice, check its records. Here, the county treasurer, when it's undisputed in the record, did absolutely nothing. And I don't believe that that satisfies the due process required in this case. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I believe I have a little over a minute left, so I'll be brief. Mm-hmm. The issue that I'm hearing opposing counsel say is that when there is an irregularity in the process, and that is not the standard. That is what he has brought, it has been presented throughout. But the word irregularity is not found in the statute, it's not found in the case law. The word is, were those tax sale notices returned as undeliverable? And then the Schmidt versus Langle case that specifically says that. When they are returned undeliverable, then the due, the additional diligent inquiry must take place. And he goes on to say, one of the last paragraphs of page 451, says, we conclude that neither the unbroken line of Colorado cases interpreting 3911-128 nor due process considerations demand such additional efforts as a matter of law. Moreover, in our view, these expansive standards of diligence provide little guidance as to when the inquiry must cease, and little assurance that the efforts required will be fruitful or within the limits of practicality.
I see your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council. We appreciate your arguments this afternoon. Those arguments will be helpful to the court. The matter stands submitted to the court, and an opinion shall issue in due course. Thank you. Council are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.